Hello and welcome to The Reading Life, WWNO's weekly look at the New Orleans literary scene. I'm Susan Larson. This week I'll be talking with best-selling novelist Sina Jeter Naslund, author of The Fountain of St. James Court, or Portrait of the Artist as an Old Woman. We'll also talk with Cassandra King, author of Moonrise, and Tulane University's Megan Holt from One Book, One New Orleans. I'm so excited to welcome New York Times bestselling author Sina Jeter Naslund. Sina is the writer-in-residence and distinguished writing professor at the University of Louisville, where she lives, and where her new novel is partly set. Sina has written many wonderful books, The Unforgettable Ahab's Wife, as well as Abundance, a novel of Marie Antoinette. Her ninth work of fiction is the novel The Fountain of St. James Court, or A Portrait of the Artist as an Old Woman, and it is a book I will love forever. Sina, welcome to The Reading Life.
Thank you so much, Susan. It's good to be here with you.
The Fountain of St. James Court is a lovely portrait of two women, Catherine Callahan, or Rin, who's just finished a novel, and she is, as you put it, at 69, a woman of a certain age, but not a great age. And the novel she's just finished is about a painter, Elizabeth Vigée Le Brun. So how did you arrive at these characters and think of putting them together for this new book?
I first met the French painter from the 18th century when I was researching my novel on Marie Antoinette, titled Abundance. When I came upon the painter, I looked at her paintings and I preferred them to any of the other portraits of Marie Antoinette, and then I thought I'll find out something about her. She was so interesting that I went down that track thoroughly. I abandoned Marie Antoinette for a while and just read about Elizabeth Vigée Le Brun. So I was looking for a chance to write about her. But at the same time, I wanted to write something along in novel form with a contemporary setting. I used to write short stories that was always contemporary, but my novels have been primarily historical novels. So the two ideas kind of came together, that I would write about a writer and I would write about the book she had written by writing it for her.
And it's very close to home, isn't it? It's set in your actual neighborhood.
Yes, I live in Louisville, Kentucky, and I live on St. James Court, and there is a wonderful fountain right outside my window right now of Venus rising from the sea.
Well, it's very evocative and lovely, and you can sort of get a real sense of the neighborhood as you read it. Now, one of the things I love most to read are novels about women thinking or women reading. You know, I loved A.S. Byatt's Possession, of course, and Carol Shields' Unless. Those are two of my favorite books. And you, of course, draw heavily on Virginia Woolf in this book, don't you?
Yes, I do, particularly Virginia Woolf's novel, Mrs. Dalloway, which is set in a single day and follows the main character through her day. At the end of the day, Mrs. Dalloway gives a party. And that's a sort of artistic creation on her part. But I love Virginia Woolf's attention to daily life and the joy that we can have in moment-to-moment living if we live fully. So I mentioned Virginia Woolf and Mrs. Dalloway within my novel. My writer is very aware of that model, and in a way, my book is a sort of homage to Mrs. Dalloway by Virginia Woolf.
And it's also a story of female friendship, isn't it?
Yes, all of my books are about female friendship, I think, as well as about the preciousness of every life. And in this book in particular, the high point, really for me, is the simple conversation between the writer and her friend who lives across the court from her. I think that the lives of women are often enhanced and made wonderful by what might seem like a simple conversation with another woman.
And much of this novel is about, for lack of a better word, pleasure. It's so rich in describing the many kinds of pleasure to be had in a woman's life. And I can only imagine that that must have just been so much fun to write.
Well, I'm delighted that you noticed that about this book. It is a joyful book in many ways. There are sad things that happen in it, too, and frightening things and challenging things. But my characters are determined to live fulfilling lives and to find joy in all kinds of small moments, appreciations of beauty, sometimes natural beauty. It's an autumnal novel set in fall season. And sometimes they find beauty just in the facial expression of another person or the way people relate to each other. So, yes, there's a lot of pleasure in this book, and there was a lot of pleasure in writing it for me.
There are also a lot of dogs, which I like a lot.
I noticed, too, this is my doggiest book.
Yes. Dogs provide a lot of pleasure in life, too.
Well, they do. That's where they belong, in this pleasant kind of book. I have had a few dogs in other stories, but I really wanted their animal presence here. They do mean a lot to us.
They were pretty wonderful. But I have to say that all is not perfect in the lives of these women. Catherine, or Wren as she's called in the novel, is kind of evaluating her life over the course of the single day and looking back at three marriages, a son who's moved away that she misses very much, you know, just kind of evaluating all the different layers of her life. And her friend Leslie, who lives across the way, is from the Rosa Parks era. And these are both women who have certain amounts of experience, but not everything in their lives has been happiness.
No, their lives are still unresolved in a sense. They're still finding their way. They're still creating their identities. The writer has just finished her novel, Portrait of the Artist as an Old Woman, and upon completing that novel, her own life comes to haunt her or to visit her, not in chronological order, but various things that she remembers come to her. So by finishing her book, she's sort of opened herself to now thinking about her life and how the parts of her life might fit together. She has been divorced 3 times, as you say, and she feels bad about that. She's disappointed that she hasn't found a life partner, but she has found a lot of closeness in her female friendships.
As do so many of us. We value those friendships, you know, as much as anything. Now, when you come to New Orleans this month, you'll be coming for SIBA, for the Southern Independent Booksellers Meeting, and you'll be doing something very special when you come to New Orleans later this month, won't you?
Yes, I'm so pleased that the New Orleans Museum of Art possesses a painting by the character who is in my novel, by the real person, Elizabeth Vigée Le Brun. This is a portrait of Marie Antoinette. My character painted a number of portraits of Marie Antoinette. This one is of the Queen holding a book in her hand. And being a bookish person myself, I'm particularly pleased that Elizabeth chose to picture Marie Antoinette that way. So it's really wonderful that there's an actual example of her work there. Her work can be found in many museums, in all of the best museums, in the Louvre in France, in the Metropolitan in New York, and the Hermitage in St. Petersburg, and that there's one of her paintings right there in New Orleans is really thrilling to me.
And it sounds like it's just going to be a wonderful event with book signing and a talk and tea with the author, which is always lovely.
I love to have tea.
So did you have a sense of what a nervy thing it was to call a novel Portrait of the Artist as an Old Woman? Did you just laugh out loud to yourself when you thought of that?
Well, that second title is important to me. Of course, it's a reference to a novel by James Joyce, Portrait of the Artist as a Young Man. That novel was published about 100 years ago, and I felt that it had become the icon for what we think of an artist as being, a rebellious young man, full of ambition. May not have accomplished anything yet, but he wants to. And I thought, well, nowadays we know that artists are also women, and I want to put that idea to the fore by writing a portrait of an artist who is not only a woman, but an old woman. So I'm trying to validate a part of our society as having artistic merit that I feel has been rather neglected historically. My characters are both old women, and they're both women of great accomplishment. They're not just ambitious. They have a granary full. They've harvested their talent and made something of it.
and they're rebellious and powerful. And that makes me love them, you know? It's going to make every reader love them, I think.
They're independent women who know who they are, and at the same time, they're not static, either one of them. They're always responding to what's going on around them and to their own newest, latest thoughts.
Well, it was just a complete pleasure to read. And you can meet Sina Jeter-Naslin Saturday, September 21st from 2 to 5 at the New Orleans Museum of Art. She'll be signing books in the Great Hall from 2 to 3. There'll be an afternoon tea in Ralph Brennan's Cafe Noma from 3 to 4. You need to make reservations for this, which is by admission. And she will also give a talk from 4 to 5 in the Stern Auditorium. Again, we've been talking with Sina Jeter-Naslin about The Fountain of St. James Court, or Portrait of the Artist as an Old Woman. Sina, I look forward to seeing you again. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Susan. We'll be delighted to be in New Orleans.
Cassandra King is a wonderful Southern novelist who writes powerfully and perceptively about the lives of Southern women in such novels as Making Waves, The Sunday Wife, The Queen of Broken Hearts, The Same Sweet Girls. Her most recent novel, Moonrise, is a creepily wonderful story that was inspired by Daphne du Maurier's Rebecca, and it will thrill readers who love that book. We're speaking to Cassandra King today from her home in South Carolina, where she lives with her husband, Pat Conroy. Cassandra, welcome to The Reading Life.
I'm delighted to be here, Susan. Thank you.
What fun this new novel is. And you've openly said that it was inspired by Rebecca. Do you remember the first time you read that book?
I think I will never forget that. I was fairly young, you know, a young teenager, maybe 14. And I was just enamored of reading and read literally everything I could get my hands on. And when I came across this book, and I just literally devoured it. I just fell in love with everything about it.
It's one of those.
Yes, it is.
So what moment really inspired Moonrise? Was it a house you'd seen, a moment you'd experience, or did this come out of your pure imagination?
Well, it was a very serendipitous sort of happening for me. We have been going to Highlands, where the book is set, Highlands, North Carolina, for the past several years. And a few years ago, we rented a house there that was just wonderfully dark and spooky and isolated, but it had the most beautiful gardens around it and raspberry bushes. That in itself, just the setting there, was just magic. And I was working on a book about Highlands. I had already decided, starting it out that summer, I had began to, you know, sort of map it out that I wanted to do something with a circle of friends. And maybe an outsider comes in or something, you know, I'm still playing around with it. And I one day was exploring the gardens and literally stumbled across a beautiful little setting kind of hidden away that turned out to be the final resting place of the former owner's wife. And she had died, you know, too young and tragically and so forth. Well, you know, that's all it would take for most writers just to get us going.
That's so true.
So I started that right now. But as just sheer serendipity would have it, I had brought along an old copy of Rebecca.
Oh, perfect.
And I started reading on it, and it began to hit me. What I had was a woman whose presence haunted the place where she used to be, you know. Mm-hmm. So I started looking for this woman in the dark, you know, shadowy halls of the place. I'd jump at noises in the night and wake up with my heart pounding and all this kind of stuff. So my imagination was going crazy.
Well, no wonder your main character's reaction seems so perfect. Well, the main character in this book is a young woman named Helen Honeycutt, who marries the widower and goes to that summer house in the Blue Ridge Mountains to try to uncover this mystery she feels is still there.
Yes. That's how it was inspired. inspired by Rebecca. It is not, Moonrise is not by any means a retelling of Rebecca, as you know, having read it, but I think you can see some of the inspiration with the mystery of the former wife and what was she really like and what happened to her and will I ever be accepted in her place? That much is some of the themes that I borrowed from Rebecca.
It's so interesting that it's a novel about female rivalry, even though one of the women is dead.
Yes. Well, I've written about friendship and I think in all of my books, different aspects of friendship, but mostly the strength, you know, that we draw from our friends and how they help us get through the really difficult times. And I wanted to kind of also look at the darker side of friendship. It doesn't always go the way it should. It's not always moonlight and roses and whatever. There are times that we want to be friends with people and we're rejected, or we're betrayed by a friend or hurt by a friend. I mean, I think everybody's had that. So, yeah, I was also very interested in exploring that some.
And so much of it is about the impossible standards that women hold themselves to and the way Helen explores the identity of her predecessor and the things she wore, the things she chose for her home, the kitchen, all those kind of domestic details that women would recognize better than anybody else.
Yes, I think we cannot help that we compare ourselves to each other. And if we're honest, especially an ex-wife or an ex-girlfriend, you know, we're going to say, oh, was she prettier than me? Or was she, you know, more gifted and more beloved and so forth? And when I do it, I just beat up on myself. And I have Helen, you know, my narrator, and this too, doing the same thing, thinking, oh, I just wish I didn't feel this way, but I just can't help it. I just don't measure up to this woman at all, you know.
Well, in the gardening area, it would have been very hard to measure up to.
Exactly.
Now, the other thing is that Moonrise is the first novel in a new publishing venture that you're undertaking with your agent, Marley Russoff, yes. And that's Maiden Lane Press. And that is a very brave thing to do these days.
It's scary. And there have been many times that Marley and I say, ah, what are we doing? But you really wanted a hardcover book, and boy, did she do a beautiful job with that, because the book was originally scheduled by another publisher to be a trade paperback because publishing is changing so much and so forth. So we went out on a limb and an adventure in publishing, and Marley had been playing with this idea of starting her own imprint for a while. So I was really glad to be the impetus.
And I think in this day and age of publishing, it's brave and it's smart. So we've been talking with Cassandra King, whose new novel is Moonrise. You can meet her Friday, September 20th at 6 o'clock at Garden District Bookshop. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
One Book, One New Orleans is that great literacy initiative sponsored by the Young Leadership Council, a wonderful effort to get the entire city to read one book. It began in 2004 with The Lesson Before Dying by Ernest J. Gaines, and other selections have been Rising Tide by John Barry, Coming Out the Door for the Ninth Ward by the Nine Times Social and Pleasure Club, City of Refuge by Tom Piazza, Gumbo Tales by Sarah Rowan, Satchmo, My Life in New Orleans by Louis Armstrong, Nine Lives by Dan Baum, and The World That Made New Orleans from Spanish Silver to Congo Square by Ned Sublett. This year, the chosen book is Louisiana by Jamaican writer Erna Brodbur. Heading up the activities for One Book, One New Orleans this year is Megan Holt, who teaches in the Tulane University English Department. Welcome to The Reading Life, Megan.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
This is so obviously a book that you think highly of. It was published in 1994 by the University Press of Mississippi. It's steeped in Louisiana lore, and yet it's a book, you know, a lot of people will be becoming aware of for the first time. So what are the qualities in this book that make it a good selection for one book?
Well, I think that, above all, everyone in New Orleans can relate to this book in some way. Whether you were born here or you moved here, this book will speak to you on a very personal level. For those of us who moved here, like I did 10 years ago, the central character really finds herself when she gets to New Orleans. And I think for a lot of us, that's our story. And for those of us who were born here, you see your family, your friends, your roots in this book.
So describe the basic elements of the plot.
Not to give too much away.
Right, of course.
There is a central character, her name is Ella Townsend, and she's an anthropologist by trade. And she's at Columbia University doing her graduate work. They send her down to St. Mary Parish, Louisiana, to interview a woman named Sue Ann Grant King, who is referred to in the book most often as Mammy. She's collecting data from Mammy, and then, nightmare for any researcher, Mammy dies before she can get her data collected. But Mammy does her a little bit of a favor and continues to transmit her story from beyond the grave. It's obvious that Mammy feels her story has not been told yet. So eventually, in pursuing Mammy's story, Ella ends up with her husband in New Orleans, Louisiana, in Congo Square. And it's there that she really embraces her gift as a seer, one would say a voodoo seer. And from there, she discovers not only her gift as the seer, she also discovers her own identity, which when she goes back to New York, finds out that she's taken that very far from where she started out, but just really embraces it.
And the writing is so beautiful. It's so incantatory, and it just really pulls you in, don't you think?
Definitely. Absolutely. You just find these beautiful phrases that you can repeat over and over again to yourself. I find myself doing it a little bit with the chant she does, "I am Louisiana," all
yes.
the time.
That's true. That yeah. really is captivating. So what are some of the events that you all have planned for this period? I mean, the reading period itself is quite lengthy, and
it
it's not a very long book.
Right.
It goes from September 18th to December 6th.
Yes.
So what are some of the programs you all have planned?
Well, we're really excited to announce that we're doing an essay contest for high school students that's going to be modeled on the work that Ella does in this book. She tries to collect data from someone who is older, and we're going to have the students interview the oldest person they know and write a biographical sketch on that person. And we're hoping that the winning student will get to meet Erna Brodbur.
Ah, great.
Yes, yes. We're also having a kickoff party on September 18th at the Marigny Opera House, which is a renovated church. It's a beautiful space. For those of you who don't know it, you should come just to look at the space, if nothing else.
So what do you think are the values of this kind of common reading experience? On the most basic level, it is how we learn and grow,
yes.
and we're accustomed to doing it in classrooms.
Mm-hmm.
But this is an effort to spread that pleasure and that challenge through an entire city. So tell us what you think we can get out of that.
Honestly, I think you kind of nailed it on when you summarized it. You said it's a way to spread it throughout the entire city. And for us, being able to have common ground with someone you meet that you may not know is a great way to build community. And that's really what we're looking at here. How do we bring different people in this community together and give them something to talk about? And this book is nothing if not a great conversation starter.
We've been talking with Megan Holt, who teaches at Tulane University and is working with the Young Leadership Council's One Book, One New Orleans initiative. Thank you so much, Megan.
Thank you for having me, and thank you to Shell, the New Orleans Public Libraries, and the Literacy Alliance of New Orleans for working with One Book, One New Orleans. We could not do it without their dedicated volunteers.
Oh, and for more information, you can go to onebookoneneworleans.com, and we'll be talking about all the events to come as fall unfolds.
Thank you so much for having me.
Here's what's on tap in the literary life this week. WWNO host of Louisiana Eats, Poppy Tooker, and photographer David Spielman sign Louisiana Eats, Tuesday, September 17th at 6 at Octavia Books. Robert Kayette signs The Education of a Lifetime, Tuesday, September 17th at 6 at Garden District Bookshop. The Fiat Lux Book Club, devoted to exploring the influence of Catholicism on writers, discusses the first half of Graham Greene's The Power and the Glory, Tuesday, September 17th at 6 at Maple Street Bookshop. Sue Campbell discusses and signs Conversations in Heaven, The Amazing Journey of Five Unique Heavenly Beings, Tuesday, September 17th at 7 at the East Bank Regional Library. Library in Metairie. Seldon Edwards signs The Lost Prince, Wednesday, September 18th, from 6 to 7:30 at Garden District Bookshop. One Book, One New Orleans kicks off the annual citywide reading initiative, sponsored by the Young Leadership Council, with a kickoff party, A Night of Music and Mysticism, Wednesday, September 18th from 6 to 9 at the Marigny Opera House, 725 St. Ferdinand Street. The book for this year's reading is Louisiana by Jamaican writer Erna Broadbur. Michael Sartiski and Stephen Ray discuss A Unique Slant of Light, The Bicentennial History of Art in Louisiana, Wednesday, September 18th at 7 p.m. at the East Bank Regional Library in Metairie. That's part of the Tennessee Williams Festival Coffee and Conversation Series. Michael Buckley signs The Sisters Grimm and Nerds, Thursday, September 19th at 4 at Octavia Books. Jenny Hahn and Siobhan Vivian sign Fight Fire with Fire, Thursday, September 19th at 5 at Octavia Books. Also, Lauren Miracle appears at Octavia to sign The Infinite Moment of Us, Thursday the 19th at 5 o'clock. Poet Melissa Ginsberg reads from her collection Dear Weather Ghost, Thursday, September 19th at 6 at Maple Street Bookshop on Maple. Musician and writer Danny Ellis signs his memoir The Boy at the Gate, Thursday, September 19th at 6 at Maple Street Bookshop on Maple Street. Ellen Stimson signs Mud Season, Thursday the 19th from 6 to 7:30 at Garden District Bookshop. Today's guest, Cassandra King, signs Moonrise, Friday, September 20th from 6 to 7:30 at Garden District Bookshop. SOLA, the South Louisiana chapter of the Romance Writers of America, meets Saturday, September 21st at 10 at the East Bank Regional Library. Farah Roshan, an author who has published with such traditional publishers as Harlequin, as well as self-publishing her work, offers a crash course on publishing in the digital age, from story conception to marketing an ebook. For information, check out solawriters.org. Anna Dudney signs her Llama Llama picture books, Saturday the 21st at 11 at Octavia Books. Andrea Beatty signs her new book, Rosie Revere, Engineer, Saturday, September 21st at 11:30 at Maple Street Bookshop on Maple Street. Mary Engler signs Igniting the 19th Century Embers of Lourdes, Saturday, September 21st at 1 at the Catholic Bookstore. Annie Barrows signs Ivy and Bean Take the Cake, Saturday, September 21st at 1:30 at Octavia Books. The Walker Percy Center and the Loyola Writing Institute are offering 4 separate writing classes starting September 17th. Writing Well-Crafted Fiction is taught by Stephen Ray. It meets Tuesdays from 7 to 9 and starts September 17th for 8 weeks. The Soul of Wit, Flash Fiction Writing, a class in short fiction, is taught by Tom Andes. It meets Wednesdays from 7 to 9 and starts September 18th for 8 weeks. Writing the Essay as Story, Creative Nonfiction will be taught by Peyton Burgess. He's the fiction editor of the New Orleans Review. His class meets Thursdays from 7 to 9 and starts September 19th for 8 weeks. Your Magic Words, Crafting Poetry will be taught by Vince Salucci. It meets Fridays from 6 to 8 and starts September 20th for 8 weeks. If you're interested, email lwi@loino.edu for more information or call 504-931-9902. Major support for The Reading Life comes from Octavia Books. Additional support comes from the Christwood Retirement Community, Our Lady of Holy Cross College, and the University of Louisiana at Lafayette Press. The theme song and end music for The Reading Life is by Matt Perrine and Sunflower City. The Reading Life is produced by Jenny Lawson and is a production of WWNO. You can listen to us anytime or subscribe to our podcast at wwno.org. Or you can email us anytime at thereadinglife@wwno.org. I'm Susan Larson. Thanks for listening and keep reading.